Views expressed in this show are not necessarily those of Periscope State University or Dr. Muhammad.
Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We do for UNITY. Cool.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
fighting. Right now, right now.
Now we're down to do the right thing. Let's do it right now.
That's right. That's right. We are going to do it right. There is lots of things going on today, folks. And, we're just trying to get our setup here. You remember last week, if you were listening, somehow or another, there was a technical glitch and my guests couldn't hear me. And people who know me know, don't stop because I'm not a part of the show. And they did. They went on having their conversation about how the corporations and the government was contaminating their communities. And so it was a beautiful conversation to watch them do that without their host. So the only thing I did was text them to say stop at 1:59 because that's when we end. But yeah, so hopefully we won't have that happen today. But this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And we have a lot to talk about, you all. This is some extraordinary times that we have been in and are in. And we gotta figure it out and we gotta get organized and escalate the fight. And so that's what part of this conversation today is. But I just want to give you a glimpse of this past weekend, because I think it's going to help us understand the conversation that we're having today. But yeah, it's more than a notion, y'all. So we had escalating raids, ICE raids in LA. And in some ways, I'm glad the resistance happened before the weekend, because it did take some of the drama from the parade that you all's president was trying to have. And it overshadowed it, because then people started to really think about, wait a minute, what is up with these ICE raids? And we had the same, a similar situation here in Missouri, where an Asian woman was lifted up, snatched up by ICE in Missouri. And people were like, whoa, wait a minute. Mr. President, you said you were getting the most dangerous and violent people. Here are folks that are, you know, working in restaurants, working as day laborers, daycare. These people have been here 10, 20, 30 years without incident. What are you doing? But then we find out that they, the little Nazi, Stephen Miller, had a quota of 3,000 deportations a day. They weren't making that because they had hyped up so many criminals that didn't exist. So then they had no choice but to start rounding up people in order to make that quota. So that's when you started to see people, even some former Trump supporters, say, ho, wait a minute, wait a minute. But the other thing that was going on in while all of this was happening, people were mobilizing for the No Kings protest. And there was some 2,100 of those throughout the country. And they, up to 5-6 million people, and they happen in every state in the union, including red states. So I want you all to take note of that, because this whole thing about it, you know, all the folks are for Trump. No. And little by little, it's hard to erode that support for him, but it's happening. And so then what you have is the deployment of the National Guard, thanks to homeland security head, this incompetent woman doesn't know what she's doing. So she's going to liberate, that's her words, the city of LA from the socialist and burdensome leadership, that's in quotes, of Mayor Bass and Governor Newsom. So already the narrative is these folks don't need to be in office. Forget that they were democratically elected. We're going to usurp their power, and they have none. And best they could, they tried to defy that, and it didn't work. The courts ruled in favor of the government coming in and usurping state power, which is very interesting because just last year, this same woman who was a governor herself said that never should, you know, people come in and take away the rights and authority of the states. And yet, yeah, she's first to do that. And I think one of the things that was most horrendous was the tackling and arrest of Senator Alex Padilla. And one of the things he said afterwards, and this resonates with all of us. He said, if they can do this to a U.S. senator in broad daylight in front of cameras at a press conference, what are they doing to black and brown people when nobody's watching? And I think those of us on this call and in the studio know what they do. We witnessed or been a part of that. And so we have, you know, the deployment of the U.S. Marines. This is a part of the military branch that is trained to kill, to disrupt, to destroy. Why are we deploying them to streets in urban areas? So, you know, you start to see the escalation of the police state right in front of your very eyes. And so right on the heels of that comes the assassination of two senators in Minneapolis. So almost like minute by minute, we were seeing the escalation of violence, state sanctioned violence. And now we are here. And we are here in some dangerous times because now your president wants to start a war in Iran. So for me, I'm still saying let's invoke Congress Amendment 25 because this man is unhinged and he is a national threat to our security, the individual's security that folks like us. And he's going to have this country not only devolve politically, but economically as well. So we are here to talk about the escalation of the ICE raids, the protest and where we think they can go from here. But, you know, we got all of this stuff happening right here in St. Louis, too. I know oftentimes people think, oh, it's only happening on the coast, East Coast or West Coast. But no, right here, ICE has been doing its thing. So I want to welcome our guest, Bill Gallegos, who's been here before. But Bill is a longtime organizer and strategist in the Latino Chicano movement. He's today representing the Mexico Solidarity movement. And that's, you know, I've been trying to get my information from there. We talked earlier before we went on air about trusted sources because you can't trust the mainstream media for some of these twisted narratives. And so when I want to know about stuff, that's one of the places I go. In the studio, we have Leticia Seitz, who's ED of Latinos in Acción, which is a immigrant-led grassroots group fighting for dignity and rights of the immigrant community. And that could be various battlefields because I've been on the battlefield with them when it came to labor rights, what's going on in the workplaces when we've done some actions. And so welcome both of you all to the show.
Thank you, Jamala.
Thank you, Jamala.
So I just want to say what's going on in LA now, Bill. What's the temperature? What are people doing? And when I say people, I think we should stratify it in terms of like, what are Latino people doing and how are they surviving? And then the rest of the community, what has been the response to what's going on?
Well, ever since the Trump administration took power and fulfilled its promise, we will unleash an ethnic cleansing campaign beginning on day one. They've been terrorizing primarily Latino, but not just Latino communities, also Asian Pacific Islander communities here and throughout the state. And this has, as you might expect, with the people who have built resistance movements since the United States annexed Mexico's Northern Territories in the 1840s, responded. Not with fear, although there's fear, not with hiding, although people have had to do that, but with resistance. So we've had a resistance movement, and that really began to show itself on May Day this year, when 10,000 people came out in Los Angeles, mobilized by unions and worker centers and immigrant rights organizations, and it was overwhelmingly oppressed people of color and overwhelmingly Latino. So that was kind of the beginning, and then this past weekend, there were about 20 No Kings rallies throughout this L.A. area, but the largest one was in downtown Los Angeles, which had over 100,000 people. And, you know, the communities being mostly affected are really at the forefront of this fight against the effort to impose fascism in our country. Because this is now, immigrant defense is the front line to trying to defeat fascism right now. Because they won't stop with us. They won't stop with us. The effort here is to completely dismantle the remnants of democracy in this country and to impose a white minority rule, a Christian nationalist white minority rule in this country, apartheid. So that's the objective. And I think, you know, what we're seeing here is workplace raid at churches. You know, people coming out of the courtroom for their immigration hearing being picked up along with children, going into areas where, you know, they're going into the fields, where, people, grow and harvest the food that feeds this country. So the effort is to do the mass deportation, but the larger objective is to create fear and to crush resistance to this, the agenda of MAGA and the right.
And that's absolutely becoming clearer and clearer every day, even to citizens who don't consider themselves politically astute. I mean, one of the things that people that I talk to, that just regular everyday people, it was the scene from the strawberry fields where the workers were running. That, for whatever reason, was really captured people's imagination. And I can only think that it was because we saw similar images when slaves were running away from out of the fields to freedom. And, you know, the boss man was running and chasing them with horses or on foot with guns. And so, again, historically, we've seen these episodes again and again. And now, you know, they tend to focus on one group and then demonize, villainize them, and then go to another group, and then we all looking at each other crazy while they continue to reign supreme. And so I think part of the education has to be who is the
enemy. But you're so right, Jamala. The historical precedent for this is the slave patrols.
Right.
That's
absolutely
the historical precedent. And their modern day, January 6th is modern day, where they marched into the Capitol with the Confederate flag, caused the death of police officers, 1,500 criminals convicted with due process, which we're not getting, and then pardoned by Trump.
Right.
They said they were going to hang Mike Pence.
Right.
They're going to hang the vice president.
Right.
So that's an insurrection. You want to see what a modern insurrection is? That's what that was.
Absolutely.
Not people trying to defend families and children and to prevent, you know, this horrible ethnic cleansing campaign.
Right. And so closer to home in St. Louis, I know people tend to think we're just black and white, that there's no other racial groups here, ethnic groups, and that's, you know, far from the case, even though they're fairly scattered. But Letitia, what is going on in the communities that you're seeing, and you on the front line with some of these workers trying to not just educate them about a new process, that a new way of living that they're going to have to be considering and implementing, but just really the opposition to what's coming down?
Well, our community is with fear. We have many broken families because of the system. And when you see a detention of any immigrant or any Latino, we know that it's going to be a family who is going to be in need right away, because you don't know what is going to happen next. So right now in my community is the fear of getting out, even for groceries or even taking the kids to the school. The kids are not going to be happy to the school because they are, their minds is thinking what is going to happen with my dad and my mom. Even the kids at school, they be some kids very bully about the immigrants that they supposed to, everybody who is brown at this point is criminal. So it's undocumented. So right now it's like making jokes about immigrants or making jokes about Latinos, or yes, the beaners are going to be grilled, or, you know, to see a lot of angry, a lot of fear, but also we need to keep in working, and we are adapting many ways to fight together. It's no, we are denied to normalize this issue right now.
And it's something you said that reminded me of at the border when they were having these mass centers and children were being snatched from parents, and that got a rise out of the American folks. But some of those people, we never found out what happened to them. We never found out where the kids were. What?
A lot of those, hundreds of those kids have still not been returned to their families.
Exactly.
Well, where the hell are they? Are they somewhere in a particular place, or they got adopted by folks? What happened?
We don't know exactly what happened. Even now, I don't know if a bill is agree with this or not, but it's, I think it's happening also in LA. The foster homes who has kids from minorities, kids, they've been be a part of the foster parents. So they hitting also that area. Having the kids, where they're going to be, we don't know. We haven't received them, any kids who are lost. And we, since then, we don't know what happened with those kids.
So nobody's keeping track of them. When I say nobody, even in the communities where they come from, do we have a count about, okay, four kids were missing from the Martinez family, and two are missing. Do we have that kind of count? Because it seems to me that as time goes on, you know, trying to reconnect families like that is probably going to be almost impossible, because now it's another issue. Impossible. And they know that. I mean, really.
Exactly. And the parents were deported. The parents were deported. So how are they going to fight if they don't know who has their kids?
Yeah, that seems criminal to me.
It is.
And another thing, you all, I just want to get your opinion about this. I remember for a couple of years, maybe 22, 23, maybe some of 24, when the Republican governors were loading immigrants on buses to, quote, sanctuary city. So you had Governor Abbott from Texas, you had Santos from Florida, and you had the one from Arizona. And I kept thinking, somebody's going to stop it. There's some immigration attorney that's going to say, here's why this is wrong, or here's why this is illegal. And it never happened. And so now when I think about all of these immigrants that are in the cities that are now under siege, I'm thinking, okay, this obviously was orchestrated pretty damn good. What are you all thinking about that?
Come on, Bill. Tell them.
Well, I think all of this. So, you know, what happened with the children, there's hundreds of them that have never reunited with their parents. Families and community have had to step in. So families who are, we're talking working class, but we're talking poor working class people who have had to step in and not only take responsibility for the children, but the emotional burden of children who don't know what has happened to their parents.
Exactly.
So this is horrible cruelty as policy. Horrible cruelty as policy. And I think that, you know, this is, you know, the racial dimension of this must be brought out. You know, I live in Los Angeles. We're the fifth wealthiest urban center in the world. Fifth wealthiest. California is the fourth or fifth largest economy in the world. But the wealth gap here, so if you have a white family, your average wealth is $344,000, which probably means you own a home. For Mexicanos, Mexican Americans, it's $3,500. For African Americans, it's $4,000. You can't even get a good used car for $4,000. So who created the wealth that made Los Angeles the fourth wealthiest urban center in the world? In the world. It rests on the shoulders of primarily Black and Brown and Asian Pacific Islanders who are forced into our garment industry, who have to work in our garment industry, our service industry, who take care of wealthy white folks and their kids and their seniors, who do the construction. That's what anchors the economy here. So this attack, its outcomes that I think the white power structure wants to achieve, they don't want to get rid of all that labor. They want us to live in terror. So we don't think about union. We don't think about worker centers. We don't think about resistance. We don't think about a living wage. That's what they're hoping to achieve here. Is besides the ethnic cleansing, they want to achieve kind of an almost semi-slave workforce. The folks that take in the private sector home healthcare industry, you know, almost all Filipina women and Latinas, it's until the worker centers won them the right to a break, to get a lunch break, so they can eat when they're doing that 12 hours of work taking care of folks.
I'll go to the restroom.
So that's the reality that we live in. So I think this is, you know, this is the we're fighting a larger systemic battle here. So the first battle has to be ICE out, abolish ICE, get rid of the armored vehicles that are in our communities, the attack weapons, the helicopters, you know, the military invasion and occupation of our communities is the number one. But the second thing is to really win complete and full human rights for this population. You know, they always talk about, you know, who's going to do the work if they don't do it and it anchors our economy. And I get that. That's a liberal view. But we don't want folks here just because we're going to exploit them. Mm. We want them here because they're sisters and our brothers, they're human beings.
And so, Bill, it's actually super exploitation because, one, as you said, you don't even have a grievance process. You're scared.
Right.
And so they know that they can treat you any old kind of way. Work you for sun up and sun down, half pay you. So yeah, it's a new form of slavery. Yeah. And so
people have been organizing, and this is an effort to try to push back on all the great organizing that's been happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Leticia, in St. Louis, the St. Louis area, where are people working that they could be exposed to the raids, but also industries that people tend to ignore but are vital to this economy? Because I remember specifically after Trump said, round them all up, then some of his buddies might have whispered in his ear, well, hold up, wait a minute. You know, let's exclude the ones that's out there in the fields. And so then he doubled back and came and said, oh, well, man, we know this is a vital economy, we won't be doing that. I'm like, yeah, okay. Well, so the division I think it could create is, I'm a Latino and I'm like somebody's nanny. I get no protection because I'm not in the fields, you know, for the agribusiness. What is up with that?
That's crazy. I mean, it's right now our community's hunting is pretty much roofers, construction, landscaping, people who works in the hotels, obviously people who works in the fields. And right now in the city, we have city north everywhere is ice with using trucks with even Mexican plates on it or rental cars with no place, with no signs, anything. So they're hunting and Quick Trips, Home Depot, Lowe's, where this is the construction materials for them, and they work so early to get them. So they've been working. Right here, I have some information that they are in restaurants to hunt in the clients and hunting the people who's working in restaurants. So this is crazy the way that it's been attacking us and the hunting us, because like Bill says, in the human rights right now at all.
But I think we have to have a different kind of conversation about why and how we support immigrants, because sometimes it's based on the fact that we are being inconvenienced because they're not there working on our behalf,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to becoming real allies and seeing that the system itself is messed up. So when people can't get those strawberries and they are they going to be high, now we want to fight for, you know, Latinos to be out there working their backs off. And so I'm trying to figure out how do we transcend that kind of conversation where it's not just when you're inconvenienced by this, you know, messed up policy, but that these are human beings with families, with lives, with dreams. And what are we doing, those folks who are benefiting from the super exploitation?
I think right now the way that to be united and really to feel what is in our side, how is our family is looking for support, because right now, as I said, is everybody who is detained, everybody who is deported is going to be a broken family. So we need to put attention in that part, because it's not just the money that is going to be needed or support. It's going to be also mental health, emotional health, because, I mean, our community needs to support, but also I think the unity between communities, black, brown, white, understand what is the problem that is living, because maybe we're so far that this is not happening in San Luis. ICE is whatever, but not in San Luis. Guess what? ICE is with next to you, in your neighbor, across the street, is right there, even in the churches, because now we have some pictures that they've been hunting kids at schools, Catholic schools in the city,
wow.
with ICE vans over there. Mm. So it's like Bill says, they want us to be afraid, to be scared, to be worried about it's going to happen. And now, here in San Luis, we have some stores that they've been like a ghost town. Nobody there, nobody there, because they're afraid to get out.
So, you know, when Letitia talks about the services that immigrants need, because as soon as somebody gets snatched up, that means they have some specific needs. Where in LA are people going when these kinds of things happen? If they're so scared to come out of the house, how do you get services to them? I'm talking about even like the mental health services, even medical services, groceries, you know, what's going on? And do people know, does ICE know where those places are? So they're sitting around waiting in the shadows so that they can swoop on them.
Well, there's a really strong support network here. It's called they're calling it a rapid response network.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that they do is they let people know when they learn about where ICE raids are going to happen, and they send people there to stand up to ICE, to observe, to photograph, to document, you know, to provide as much protection as they can. So that's going on all over the city. And then we have a broad network of immigrant rights organizations and worker centers that are providing enormous support, legal support, emotional support, support like things. You know, there's food banks that are helping people right now. So there's the Korean Immigrant Workers Advocates. There's the Gukali Depska, which is Day Labor's organizing network, the LA Black Workers Centers, the Filipino mm-hmm. Workers Center, and CHIRLA, the Coalition for Humane Immigrants Rights, which the Trump administration has targeted to destroy. They've accused them of supporting violence, and they're talking about filing criminal charges, taking away their nonprofit status, so that it's almost impossible for them to raise the funds that they need. So I think there's a couple of things we need to do. One is we really, really need to, you know, the answer to your question, Jamala, is something that we know. How do we change the situation? It's organizing. We have to organize. And part of that organizing is the kind of political education that helps people understand what is the root cause of this problem. You know, where does all this stem from? You know, like the folks in the Global South and Europe say, we're here because you were there. you came over and colonized our country and exploited our country.
Exactly.
And now that's why we're mm-hmm. here in England and France. And that's the situation here. You know, a lot of our Central Americano compañeros and compañeras, they're here because the United States fomented, you know, horrible violence in El Salvador, in Nicaragua, in Honduras, in a number of other places, you know, that they've has compelled people to have to leave. You know, they exploited the North American Free Trade Agreement, allowed U.S. agribusiness to go into Mexico, and 3 million farm-related jobs were lost. Farmers, small farmers went out. Farm workers were gone, had no work. Where did they go? Where did they go? Hmm. So this is kind of the, you know, we can help people understand what the real root cause of the system is here, and also educate people. And I you know, I think this has to be led by oppressed communities of color, because we're the ones most directly impacted. But I do think our white allies need to step up. Where's the women's movement out here? You know, the majority of the people that are being impacted by this ethnic cleansing campaign, the majority are women, women
right.
of color.
Right.
So I want our sisters to step up, you know. I still can't figure out how a majority of them voted for Trump, but now's the time to get right and step up.
Yeah,
they got to be there. We need those allies.
Yeah, because even if it's just mother to mother, Bill, you see this mother being snatched
that's
from
right.
the arms of her kid. What are you feeling right then that you
that's
feel compelled
right.
to say something, do something?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, if you're you know you're from a faith community, then you know this is not what
yeah.
any faith says we should be doing.
Right.
So, you know, there's, but I think the answer is, you know, now's the time when we have to step up our organizing, but I do feel like there's a real need for strategy. You know, I'm a little bit worried that, you know, we had that big uprising with, Occupy, mm-hmm. and it didn't last. Mm-hmm. The big uprising with Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. and it's not what it was, you know, so I think we need to learn the lessons from that, you know, about the importance of building infrastructure, the importance of strategy, of having a program for making this a truly equitable and just and democratic society, even as we're fighting these immediate things of get the hell out of our community,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, quit taking our children and quit terrorizing our schools and our churches. And, you know, we got to do that. But I do think, you know, we really need to think about long-term of how we build this movement so that it's sustainable and gets stronger.
And I want to get back to that because that's definitely one of the questions that I have for you all. I also want to talk about like how we resist ICE. And I know when ICE started coming out in St. Louis, there were trainings, you know, what to do. But I think in some ways people are still scared because if you putting yourself in front of these folks who are trigger happy to snatch up, you know, immigrants, what are they going to do to you? But what I've seen is there was one episode, I can't even remember where the whole damn neighborhood came out with those monster water guns and just pelted these ICE agents, and all they could do was run back in the car. And I'm thinking, oh, is it that easy? So I hear people saying, we're going to surround you know, this, or we're going to not let them in the church. How are there incidences where ICE has roughed up the people who attempted to do that, or they just, you know, tuck their tails and go away? And what's been your experience here in St. Louis, Tisha?
Well, obviously we are not that way yet, but it's close. It's close into, we can have crazy people to attack in that way. The thing that we're doing is, for example, in Mexican stores that we have, they've been parking, ICE agents, and obviously the owners are protecting the clients, and they say, you know, get away and go back and whatever. So the ICE agents, they feel them. They are trying to, you know what, I'm going to back. And they back because if behind the store is a lot of departments where the Latino community is. So every day we patrolling with a group that is there, patrolling that area and see what is going on. So right now, you yell at them and they you're going to leave a little bit, but they're going to return. So, but now it's every single day, anytime they're hunting us, and we know where they are and what card they are using.
So it seems like their strategy is to keep coming back, see what points of vulnerability there are. So if nobody's there or if somebody's walking alone, it's almost like being in the damn jungle, you know, where the lion is waiting in the cut. Or, you know, it's just like, this is not the way we are supposed to be living. So for you in LA, how are people resisting ICE? How are they supporting immigrants in a real way?
Well, it's, you know, the masses are endlessly created. So like they raided some high end, restaurant in San Diego. Folks just came out in mass and ran them off. Ran them off. So that's, you know, they tried to go into a school here in Los Angeles, LA Unified School District. The principal, the teachers, the parents, you are not going to walk into this school and take our children. And they left. So, you know, it's a question of, you know, mass resistance. You know, we should do everything we can as individuals, but, you know, we're so much more effective when we're doing it as a collective body, when we're doing it together. That's our power. So, and I think there are people now, like I said, there's a lot of organizations here, and I'm really gratified that, you know, organized labor is starting to step up. You know, better late than never. I think that's really, really positive. But you know, the question is, we have to be organized for this. So we have the organization includes, you know, the rapid response teams, lawyers, people providing food and support that way, organizations providing Know Your Rights training, faith community offering sanctuary in their facility. Folks that are doing like incredibly creative messaging and communication. You know, both, through social media and in the protests. We have our art and cultural workers that are starting to come out. Tom Morello from the Rage Against the Machine just organized a big benefit to raise money for the immigrants. So we have a lot of these facets of the struggle coming together. It's a lot of facets of the struggle that are coming together. And I think part of what, you know, we need, and Jamala, you know, this is in our history, we need an organized self-defense component to this. Not raggedy. You know, folks that know what they're doing, folks that are thoughtful, folks that know how to get out the provocateurs, folks know how to protect people and get them into safe spaces. We need that too.
Because there's
the state. We can get rid of the ICE and the militia. I mean, ICE and the Marines, but there's militias all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not wielding shotguns. They're wielding high velocity assault weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And they were already operating down at the border. The Minutemen have been operating down at the border for years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we need a lot of pieces to this, and I think it's starting to come together. But the main thing we need is, let's not be dumb and disunite on something stupid. Let's unite. Mm-hmm. Let's find that common ground.
Right.
And if we got differences, let's handle them thoughtfully and carefully.
Right. And I know there's a difference between St. Louis and the second largest city in the country, but I'm wondering, what does the rapid response look like here, Letitia, and how are you positioned with other immigrant rights groups to get people to support what's going on?
They've been working so great. They've been responding as soon as possible with the community. The community feels so protective with them, and also it's a lot of volunteers. And obviously we need more and more because it's ICE everywhere. So we need to find out how we can help. But also they've been working great. And obviously, more community is getting to support the immigrants, and they asking what we need to do. So we're going to have some events coming up to see everybody together, how we can support, obviously, the immigrant community and how the strategy is going to change. Obviously, here in St. Louis is maybe a little bit of what's going on in Los Angeles, but still they are kicking us. They are hunting us. They are... Obviously, harming our community. Absolutely. Definitely. From the heart, mm-hmm. from the battle mm-hmm. of the heart, yeah. We are suffering a lot.
Yeah. This is trauma. This is trauma.
Obviously.
So do you have any particular dates of events that are coming up that you can share with our listeners?
It's going to be one in July the 2nd, I think it is. But, I'm going to post it on my Facebook page
and
everybody's
going to share
gonna,
that. Yeah.
Yes.
So I want to get back to this whole notion of we had millions of people in the street, 50 states, red, blue folks were coming out, to oppose the policies of, the Trump administration. And one of the things I've been thinking about, Bill, and you mentioned it, and we talk about it in Standing for Democracy, an organization that's, you know, about building a united front against fascism, is how do you take these powerful moments and build them into a movement? And I'd be the first to say that, you know, you didn't do it with Occupy, like you pointed out. You know, as powerful as Black Lives Matter was, we were not able to take that to scale and have the impact on policy and in our communities as we would have liked. How can we learn from some of these mass mobilizations that have had and have had inspired other mass mobilizations? But it's got to be more than that. It's got to be, how do we translate that into organizing units on the ground? And I think that's where we are now. We saw who came out. And even though there were 5, maybe 6, 7 million people, probably 10 more million didn't get a chance to come out because either they were working, unable to, whatever. So I think we see that there's a growing critical mass. Now, what do you suggest we do?
Pretty much have everybody on the streets. I mean everybody, Black and brown, obviously white, obviously people from other countries, to get up and be there, because we need to see the beauty of the immigration and beauty of that we are not criminals, and obviously supporting all the causes that we have. Your cause is my cause. My cause is your cause, for sure. So we need to fight together and let him know that we're not going to go anywhere. We're here. Mm-hmm. We're going to be here fighting back every time.
So strategically, Bill, what are you seeing?
Well, it's hard to say exactly, but one of the things that I think we need is some of our leaders with standing mm-hmm. need to convene some thoughtful discussions about unity and strategy. So, for example, Reverend William Barber. AOC, I think, would be another one. You know, there's folks like in our community, she's still active in her 90s, Dolores Huerta. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we need to have, and I think it's, you know, I would like to see this led by oppressed people of color. Because I think we have the broadest understanding of what's going on here and the fascist danger. We've been living with it all our lives. So I think we need those kinds of thoughtful strategy discussions about how do we bring together the critical social forces that, and allies that can enable us to win, and an assessment of where are we strongest and where is our enemy the weakest, so we can use that leverage to really begin to advance, to put our enemies on the defensive and to begin to have our own counteroffensive. So I think we need, some place, where we can begin to have those discussions about strategy, learning the very important positive and lessons from Occupy and Black Lives Matter and other movements, so that we can, that enriches those lessons enrich us if we apply them now to our situation. So we don't make the same mistakes, but we build off of what they were able to accomplish. So I think it has to be intentional. Strategy won't happen because all of a sudden it comes down from the mountain on the stone tablet. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to work at it, and we're going to have to, but I do think, it's not something where you can just call a million people together on a Zoom. It's going to have to be organized, thoughtful discussions of some of our leaders. And I know we are those that believe everyone's a leader, but we do have leaders.
Right, right.
And we respect that leadership, and we want to protect that leadership. But I think we really have to to have some of them really take the initiative to pull us together and to really help us kind of create a really concrete strategy and the kind of tactics that let everybody participate. If you only got an hour a week, we want you. It's precious. We'll mm-hmm. find a place for you. We'll, mm-hmm. There will be, the people are so creative.
Right.
You know, I'm not worried about the tactical part because that will happen.
Yeah.
But we need a strategy.
So one of the things I was been looking at is whether or not that could be done geographically, just in terms of regional, because sometimes those, the factors that you need to be exploring are different, real different from geography to geography. So the South
That's
is
right.
going to be very different from the West. And
That's
so
right.
can those That's people right. pull together some infrastructure and have that kind of thoughtful discussion that you're talking about? Because I think to try to do a national thing at this point, we've seen if you don't have the finances and the infrastructure to do that, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
So let's not even go there. Let's build locals and then those become the regionals, because I see some affinity with what's going on in Kansas City, Chicago, places in Minneapolis. I mean, who thought that all this stuff would be going in down in Minneapolis of all, you know, Minneapolis
That's right.
nice,
That's right.
you know, and so. So people are looking for ways to have an impact. And I think some of those factors, particularly some of the geopolitical factors, are more common based on regions than they are like nationally. But I do believe we got to do something. And it's, again, if you're really talking about systems of oppression, immigration is that front line now. But that could easily change based on what the world is doing. So let's get organized. So that anything that comes our way, we don't have to, get ready because we're already ready. And so I just look at what's going on across the country. Some places it's more intense than others, but all that means is like, we got to get together where it's not as intense because it's coming. And I think the point you made when we first come on.
I want to give a special shout out to the labor movement. Even with all the issues that it has and it's been weakened, it's still the largest social movement in this country. Got millions of members, got mm-hmm. a ton of resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could play a really important role in helping us to pull these folks together and create a strategy. Because you're right, it takes resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
not everybody can miss work.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody can pay for childcare. Not everybody can pay the cost of travel.
And I'm even talking about the infrastructure to organize. You got to have phone
that's
calls,
right.
you got to have
right.
your
that's
Zoom
right.
meetings you got to send yes. out. You know, it's like this is not like, you know, all volunteer where somebody's going to drop a ton of money on us.
That's right. So I think we really have to call on our sisters and brothers from labor, which is what Standing for Democracy is trying to do, step up.
Mm-hmm.
Not too late.
Mm-hmm.
Step up and help to make these, you know, help us to have these conversations in a respectful way, not like some labor folks have done in the past where it's our way or the highway,
mm-hmm.
but in a way that is very respectful of the communities that are being impacted.
And
so I think that can happen. I try to be optimistic, and we'll see.
We got to be optimistic. And I think some of these people we're actually in community with, we need to be asking them the question, how can you join us in setting this up? Because if we don't ask, what's happening now is people are very much in tune to what they normally do. You know, the business as usual. Let's get these cards out. Let's get these cards out of this particular workplace so we can get more union members. Well, now we got like an ominous like shadow over us that we got to like pay attention to. So for me, I'm very optimistic about the potential. I think what we have is all the distractions that and the misinformation that keep us from coming together. And we got to deal with that as well. And one of them,
I hear people all the time, they're like, you know, I keep hearing this, well, yeah, but Biden did this, and, you know, Obama was the reporter in chief. I'm like, Obama's not in the White House, so I got you.
And we criticized him for that as well. We were critical
absolutely.
Of him. Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
He's not in power now.
Right,
he's not
right.
running the FBI. He's not running
But one of the things that came up just before the big mobilizations, though, Kings, is we started to see black folks on social media saying this is not our fight. Now, we saw this earlier, too, with the hands off. So some of these people are directly and intentionally there to misdirect. And I'm not saying that there's some black folks that don't feel that way, but how are you going to say this is not an issue for black folks when we got black immigrants? We got immigrants from the Caribbean. We got them from Africa, Haiti. So why is this not an issue? Tell me that. But we got people trying to pit us Latinos and people of African descent in that way. And so all of those little minefields, we got to be conscious of, and we got to not just ignore them, but deal with them and be agitational about them and educate our folks about, wait a minute, don't you know some folks of African descent that are immigrants? Of course you do. So, it's almost like a multi-tiered kind of strategy that we have to have, both educational, both setting up those defense, rapid responses for those communities. Cause at a certain point, some of us might need that. One of the things we're doing with the local organizing committee of Stand for Democracy is we're looking at what does a plan look like? A security plan for any community or an organization that has a building. How are we thinking about this? Because these folks are thinking about it 24/7. And we need to start being more proactive about how we defending ourselves. And that includes some of those patrols you talked about, Bill. But we are not there yet because they keep hitting us with all these other little issues, like bread and butter issues, literally. And so I think what we've been telling people, like, carve out some time, as busy and messed up as your life is, if you aren't about your own liberation, then nobody is going to be about it. And so part of thriving and surviving is also fighting for your.
No, you're so right about this thing about, is it our fight? When I was doing educational justice work, we were having a conversation with black and brown parents. And we were at a church, and one of the mothers, African-American mother, says, well, I'm trying to explain to folks about why we should support bilingual education. Why should we support these language programs for these Latino children? And she says, not having a hard time. And one of the other black mothers stood up and said, you know what? The first thing they took away from us when they got us here in chains was our language.
Mm.
We should know better than anybody.
Mm.
None of us speak Yoruba. None of us speak our language now.
Yeah.
Our language was imposed on us.
Yeah.
So we better remind folks about that history. And we just all were like, whoa. everybody started clapping because that was political education on the spot,
mm-hmm.
from the people. But that, you're right, that, when we hear this, well, is this not my fight or isn't it? It is our fight. It is definitely all of our fight.
Wow. It is. And because when we talk about a democracy, to me, it's messed up the things are. This is the excellent time to think about, what do we really want this country to look like? And it's being torn apart right now, but that doesn't mean that at a certain point we won't have the ability to vision what it could look like and to really start fighting for it. And I know one of the things that when that crazy woman said that she was trying to liberate L.A. from the socialist arms of Newsom and Bass, and I'm thinking, hell, if they were socialists, you wouldn't have that income equality. You wouldn't have the poverty there. So I doubt if it's some socialism going on over there. But yeah, so I think there's that education component that when I think about for this particular issue, it's really going to be across many issues. And if we're able to educate people about the systems of oppression, why racial capitalism can pick a particular group and villainize them so that they can exploit them, economically, and then decide to pit that one against this one. We won't be so vulnerable. We won't start parroting what we've heard them say and keep the divisions going, even when they are not in the room, which is often what happens. And so, we got a few minutes left, and I just really want us to leave on a positive note, because I definitely was inspired by No Kings. We had one in St. Louis, but we also, to my surprise, had about 12 in surrounding areas where people normally think of them as Republican areas. So the dissatisfaction is there. the dissent is there. What do we do with it now that we've identified it? And locally, where do you think we should go, Letitia? And then for you, Bill, where is it in LA? Because you all had, like I said, it was the epicenter of the ICE raids, which all this was happening. I was glued to the TV watching, like, what are they going to do now? What are they doing now? But so I think you all are going to be a leader in that way for the fight against these fascist immigration policies.
Yes. Well, we need to keep the momentum still. We need to fight together. We need to be in the field. We need to, like Bill said, having this conversation, having this organization be together and trying to see the ways and the strategies to fight back, because they are one step in front of us. So we need to continue the fight, because now it's no time for us to waste. Mm. If you want to do it or not, mm-hmm. it's no time to waste.
And if you don't want to be with us, step aside and let us move forward.
Please, mm-hmm. please. Mm-hmm. So,
we got work to do here in St. Louis. I know I have to keep saying that there's immigrants here, y'all. They sometimes are in the shadow. And I think sometimes people don't even see people as immigrants, because they might know them and they might have an accent, but they say they don't know what kind of papers they have, why they're here. And so they get to find out when that person is no longer here. And they say, hey, what happened to Manuel? And they say, well, remember, he didn't have papers. Mm-hmm. What? I didn't know that. So we know immigrants. We know people who have this artificial documentation to be a citizen, which is, that's the other thing that we need to really get rid of.
Just remember, if you're celebrating Cinco de Mayo, obviously we're going to have Mexican there, we're going to have Latino community there who has maybe not papers, maybe papers, but still are our neighbors, the people who serve you, the people who are trimming your trees, having your nannies, do your kids speak Spanish because your nanny, so maybe somebody who's cooking your food. And yeah. Think about that.
Yeah, you can have a conversation right there, right on the spot. Yeah, what are you going to leave us with?
Well, I do want to say one thing, about education is, one of the big areas of attack of the MAGA right, the Confederacy of the Trump administration, is against ethnic studies programs, Black, Brown, API, and those kinds of programs. And the reason that they don't want it is not because they're worried about white kids might be made to feel guilty, because those are powerful tools for education and organizing. Once people learn the history, they're worried about white kids learning a true history and asking those questions. Mm. What the hell? Mm. How did this happen?
Right,
why
right.
is this still going on? Mm. So I think we really need to understand that a lot of these things are connected. In terms of Los Angeles, I would do a big shout out to the LA labor community, LA labor movement here. I think they could be the convener for a broad cross section of folks that want to be part of this movement: the worker centers, the women's movement, the faith community, the oppressed nationality communities here that have a lot of different kinds of organizations. I think they could be a principal convener, but they've got to do it in a way that's really respectful. Labor is the biggest; they got the most money; they got a lot of connections.
Mm-hmm.
And we need that, but not to throw around.
Right.
Not to throw your weight around, but to treat everybody. And I think if that happens, and I have a lot of confidence that that could happen, because the labor movement has gone through a lot of change and transformation here. A lot of immigrant workers in those unions. So I think that that's what we need, is we need the labor movement to step up now, I think, not just here, but nationally, and really play a role in helping to bring together a very, a broad, united movement with a strategy that we all feel is ownership of.
Right. Well, this has certainly been an engaging, educational discussion. Thank you all for sharing. And we're going to have to bring you back, because this is going to be on the front lines for a long time to come. But I want you all to be safe out there. I'm saying that for myself as well. If you didn't get a chance to hear this one or a previous a show, just go to JamalaRogers.com. This is your host, and I will see you on the battlefield.
Thank you, Jamala. Thank you, Leticia.
Thank you. Gracias.
But don't you stop.